I can't roll my eyes hard enough. Nice to meet you too, I mutter. What was that? Nothing, I say quickly. Wait, aren't you supposed to introduce yourself? The elevator groans. I suppose I am. How I go from transporting his royal deviousness, the Goblin King himself, to some trainee is beyond me. The elevator clears its throat. The name is Lord Archibald Reginald Kensington, reluctantly at your service. Lord of the elevators? I ask. Is that really a thing? Of course it's a thing. Now get on. Okay. Sorry I asked. I step out of my shoes and into the slippers. I turn around as the doors shut and then immediately open up again. We've arrived at the office of the chief director, says Lord Kensington in a bored voice. Whoa, that was fast. As I am lord of these elevator shafts, that should really be expected, shouldn't it? Replies Lord Kensington with a harumph. Now be gone with you, and don't you dare take my slippers. I step out of the elevator and glance around the small lobby. There's only a fancy glass desk with a big Office of the Chief Director plaque across the front. The same secretary who escorted Elsie and me to our seats on welcome day is seated behind it. A giant picture of Chief Crow in a business suit fills the back wall. My smile fades at the secretary's serious expression. She points to a door marked conference room and says, "This way, please. They're waiting for you." They? My mind flashes back to the last time I was in a conference room, when everyone had just learned that I was a magician. A few of the directors wanted me locked away. What if this time they mean to go through with it? Please, oh please don't let me be in trouble. If they really do know about Magician Girl 18, I'm toast. This time, the conference room is a lot emptier. Agent Magnus is seated at one side of a long table, his big arms folded across his chest. Agent Fiona and Chief Crow both sit on the opposite side. Agent Fiona shoots an annoyed look at Magnus as the secretary leads me into the conference room. Amari, says Chief Crow with a wide smile. I do hope your afternoon is going well. Please take a seat. It can't be that bad if she's smiling, right? I glance over at Agent Fiona, and she gives me an encouraging nod. I start to relax a little until Magnus pats the chair next to him. Don't you go getting comfortable. Wait till they tell you about the reckless idea that's brought you here, he says to me. He shakes his head. In all my years. Agent Fiona chucks a pencil past his head. Reckless idea. I take a seat beside Magnus, my eyes going back and forth from adult to adult. What's going on? Well, Amari. Chief Crow gets to her feet and puts her hands behind her back. The gills on her neck flap open and shut as she clears her throat. You're no doubt aware of this morning's attack on one of our outposts. It happened right in the middle of our tour, I say. There were flashing lights and everything. Chief Crow sighs and begins to pace. It was an especially violent attack that resulted in terrible injuries to a number of our members. These weren't agents, mind you. Rather, very specialized researchers studying wild magical flurries. The new batch of hybrids appears to be especially bloodthirsty creatures. These hybrids exhibit superhuman speed and strength far beyond the ones of the past. She shakes her head. It's quite unlike anything we've seen before. Truly, says Agent Fiona. The entire research team had to be flown to the nearest supernatural health center. That's awful, I say. The long and short of it is that we've become quite desperate. says Chief Crow. As far as we know, Moreau is the only magician with enough magic to create hybrids. A spell that can warp nature so perversely is typically far beyond his apprentices. Until you showed up here, we had no idea a single person could even be so magical. That must be why they were so quick to accuse me. I swallow. It wasn't me. Everything I've done with magic has been a complete accident. I wouldn't even know how to use a spell. No one in this room is accusing ye, says Agent Fiona. Why, you'd have had to be in two places at once to order the attack on that outpost. What we are saying is that someone we believe to be connected to Moreau is creating these hybrids, and we don't know the first thing about this new magician. So when Agent Fiona came to me with what I'll admit is a rather outlandish proposal, I found myself forced to consider it, says Chief Crow. That's when I realize why I'm here and why Agent Magnus is so upset. I lean forward in my seat. You're going to let me talk to Moreau. Agent Fiona and Chief Crow both nod. Agent Magnus gets to his feet, knocking over his chair. Amari won't have any part in it. Agent Fiona reddens. It's not your decision, is it? Ye great big oaf. Her blue eyes come back to me. We wouldn't ask ye if it wasn't important. Innocents are getting hurt. Oh, do sit down, Magnus, snaps Chief Crow. Magnus picks up his fallen chair and drops into it dramatically. That guy can sure throw a tantrum. Now, Amari, Chief Crow continues, I know you were quite eager before, but I'd like to be sure you've properly thought this through. We would be placing you near the most terrible villain in the history of our world. Desperate or not, it's not a decision I'd have you take lightly. This kind of thing ain't her job yet, grumbles Agent Magnus. She's just a kid, for crying out loud. And it's still her decision, says Agent Fiona. I lean back in my chair and pretend to think it over. I get that Agent Magnus feels like it's his job to keep me safe, and maybe that's what Quentin would have wanted. But this is the opportunity I've been waiting for. I'm doing it. Agent Magnus throws up his hands. Agent Fiona blows out a heavy sigh of relief. Ye have our thanks, Peters. Indeed you do, says Chief Crow. But I have a condition, too, I continue. I want to know why you refused the trade to get my brother back, and whatever else you know about my brother's disappearance. Agent Fiona and Chief Crow both exchange a startled look. Chief Crow asks, How on earth do you know about that?
It's classified.
Agent Magnus crosses his arms. If she already knows about the letter, says Agent Fiona, then it's only fair we fill her in on the details. It's nothing she couldn't learn from Moreau himself. After what feels like forever, Chief Crow gives a stiff nod. We'll tell her everything we can within reason. Agent Fiona and Chief Crow huddle for a moment, speaking in low voices. While they talk, I sneak a peek over at Agent Magnus. He's seriously unhappy. Well, too bad. I'm about to complete step two of me and Elsie's plan. I'm about to discover what the Bureau knows about my brother's disappearance. Chief Crow and Agent Fiona return to the table. The chief speaks first. The letter we received came from one of Moreau's apprentices, and it made not just one, but two impossible demands, one for each member of Vanquish. Two demands. Chief Crow continues. The first was releasing Moreau from prison. Ye weren't here when Moreau was free, Agent Fiona cuts in. Horrible things would randomly happen without any rhyme or reason. The worst part is we'd all know it was Moreau who did it, but there was nothing we could do. The fact your brother and Maria were able to track him down is nothing short of a miracle. Elsie and I figured Moreau's apprentice would want him free. What else did the letter ask for? That, I'm afraid, really is classified, says Chief Crow. Just know that it concerns an item of immense destructive power, an item that would put many, many innocent lives at risk were it placed in the wrong hands. It takes a few seconds for the words to sink in. When they do, I try to blink back my tears. Whoever has my brother must be a horrible person to want something like that. If we can't give them what they want, what's to stop them from hurting Quentin and Maria? How are we supposed to get them back? By catching whoever has them, says Agent Fiona, coming around the table to crouch in front of my chair. And our best hope right now is getting something out of Moreau that will help us do just that. Ye are our best hope, Amari. I'm in, I say. I'll do whatever it takes. 15. It's almost time. I'm sitting in the lobby of Chief Crow's office, watching a whole bunch of adults rush in and out of conference rooms in preparation for my meeting with Moreau. When I agreed to it, I didn't think they meant right away. But as Agent Fiona explained, the Bureau has no clue when the next attack might come. The quicker they find Moreau's apprentice, the safer we'll all be. Agent Magnus and Agent Fiona gave me a list of questions that Director Van Helsing typed up himself, and I prepped with them all afternoon. Moreau is wicked smart, said Agent Fiona. He'll try and mess with your head if ye let him. He'll also try to distract you with his illusions, said Agent Magnus. Remember, no matter what he claims, you're completely safe. His magic can't penetrate the enchanted glass that holds him. It's important to show confidence, said Agent Fiona. He'll be able to sense if you're scared. Ye won't be alone down there. We'll be keeping an eye on the whole thing through the security cameras. That being said, added Agent Magnus, if at any point you do get scared and feel like you need to leave, you are free to do so. Understand? I do, I said. I won't let you down. I put on the slippers and step into Lord Kingsington alone, trying not to let my nerves show as the elevator door is shut and the adults wish me luck. Apologies for my earlier behavior, says Lord Kingsington. Trainee or not, what you're doing is very brave. Thanks, I say, but I don't feel very brave. My knees feel wobbly just standing here. Lord Kingsington zips me down to a floor I've never seen before. It's not even really a floor, just a solid wall of black metal. Could you tell me more about where I'm going? I'm realizing I didn't ask Magnus or Fiona nearly enough questions. There are a number of walled-off floors in the Bureau, typically quite dangerous or very secret places. Blackstone Prison is both. To earn a place there, you must be found guilty of truly vile acts. All visitors must be approved by the Chief Director herself. Thus, I am the only way for you to enter. Are you ready? I try to stand a little taller. Ready. Now entering Blackstone Prison, says Lord Kingsington. I'm afraid there's a speed limit while traveling through here. As the elevator lurches forward, a gap in the metal wall slides open. Everything goes dark as we pass through the thick wall. The shimmer of my moonstone badge is the only light. My heartbeat booms in my ears. And then, we're inside. Curious, I press my face against the glass. Turns out, Blackstone Prison is just one long hallway with giant glass walls on both sides. The floor and ceiling are so black, I'd think we were floating if I couldn't see the metal rails that guide Lord Kingsington through the center of the space. The prison is like those indoor exhibits at the zoo, with long walls of glass cages, only 1,000 times scarier. Scary creatures slither and skulk about. Some scream constantly, while others have laughs so cold I can feel it in my bones. A pack of drooling beasts claws at the glass. Some things are so awful, they're kept in complete darkness, but their fiery eyes follow me down the hallway. "There's no harm in covering your eyes," says Lord Kingsington.
"Good idea,"
I squeak out. It feels like a whole hour passes before Lord Kingsington finally says, "We're here." Trembling, I open just one eye and glance around before opening the other. We're in a different section of the prison now. There's only one glass cage here, and inside it is a gray-haired man in a rocking chair facing away from me. "Find your courage," says Lord Kingsington. "You can do this." I take a slow, deep breath. I can do this. The doors open, and it's deathly quiet. The kind of quiet where you can hear yourself breathing. I take a shaky step onto the glossy black floor of the prison. It's pitch black everywhere, like Moreau's cage is floating in an ocean of shadow. My eyes dart to Moreau in his chair, expecting him to turn around to face me at any moment. Only he doesn't. Not even when I come right up to the glass. "Moreau?" I say in a small voice, wishing I sounded braver. Suddenly, Moreau and the chair vanish, and a different scene emerges inside the cage. A fancy living room with plush chairs and a large fireplace. I blink, and Moreau is face to face with me, so close that he could reach out and grab me if not for the glass. I yelp and stumble backward. A wide smile reaches across Moreau's face, and he watches me for a moment before placing his palms against the glass. "No need to be frightened. Hardly any of my power reaches beyond this cursed fishbowl. Besides, why would I harm someone I've looked forward to meeting so very much?"
"Why do you care about meeting me?" I ask.
Moreau doesn't answer. Instead, he closes his eyes and drums out a bead on the glass, using the tips of his fingers.
"Do you hear that? It's your song, child. The magic in your blood, it sings such a strong melody. Can you hear my magic as well?"
I shake my head.
"You don't possess any blood magic then."
Moreau frowns and steps away from me.
"A pity. There are blood spells that allow one to live forever."
I remember what Chief Crow said about the Vomper spell and how the Knight Brothers used it to conquer death. I don't want to live forever if it means I have to hurt people. It's wrong.
"Right and wrong are relative, my dear. For instance, is it right to keep another human being trapped in a cage? Of course not. And yet I doubt you'd agree with me that I should be set free. Remember this. There is only weakness and strength. The strong have imposed their will on the weak since the beginning of time. 'Tis the way of the world, because your bureau was stronger on the day they raided my island. I now find myself here."
"I have questions," I say. "Let's get this over with."
"As do I."
Moreau turns and begins to pace beside the glass wall.
"But we mustn't forget our manners. I am Raoul Moreau."
He dips into an elaborate bow.
"And you are?"
Amari. I lift my chin.
Amari Peters. He flinches at my last name, then laughs. How very unbelievably ironic. It all becomes clear now. Yes, how could the Bureau ever justify locking up the sister of the famous Quentin Peters? I swallow and ask, do you know where he is? He smirks, his voice mocking. Of course not. How could I lay hands on your brother from inside this cell? Agent Magnus and Agent Fiona warned me that would be his answer. I take another look at the paper in my hands. I'm supposed to ask you some questions. And I have questions for you too, he replies. Whatever will we do about this little conundrum? I think for a moment. You and your apprentice likes to make trades, right? I ask bitterly. Well, let's trade questions. We'll take turns. Moreau strokes his chin. Very well. But you must promise to be truthful in your answers. There shall only be one lie between us, and I've already told it. Agreed? He's already lied to me? Does that mean you really do know where my brother is? Moreau frowns. It means what it means. I set my jaw. That's not fair. Moreau snarls, and the cage becomes a tempest of swirling black clouds. I am not some inconsequential lackey the Bureau can bully for information. You can either accept or you can leave empty-handed, whilst utter chaos is wreaked upon your precious Bureau. And then the man smiles. The scene returns to a cozy living room, and he's pleasant again. Now, then, shall we begin? I shudder and close my eyes. Be confident. Fine. First question. Moreau turns to pace a few steps before meeting my eyes again. When the day comes that you have to choose a side, and that day will come, will you join your fellow magicians? Or would you side with this Bureau that hates everything we are? Fellow magicians? The question catches me off guard. How many other magicians are there? Hundreds, I'd wager. Hundreds? Are there really that many? Moreau laughs at my surprise. Come now, you didn't think yourself so special at that, did you? Though I'll admit you are unusually strong, and so very young. Now then, for my second question. Wait, it's my turn. No. You asked me about the current number of magicians, and I answered to the best of my knowledge. That was our agreement. I kicked the glass in annoyance. I've wasted an entire question. Quite the temper. Moreau smiles darkly. Don't be angry, child. Be better. I ball my fists at my side. Ask your next question. Moreau narrows his eyes at me. Has anyone claimed you? What do you... I catch myself and start again. I don't know what you mean by that. In the world of magicians, there are masters and there are apprentices. One to offer the power, the other to receive it. One to possess the wisdom, the other to need it. Whoever gave you such powerful magic should have claimed you by now. Unless... Unless what? I ask. No, don't answer that. That isn't my question. Moreau lets out a low snicker. That I shall answer for free. Only a very powerful magician could bestow the kind of magic you possess, the likes of which no longer exist aside from myself. It is far more likely that you were born a magician. And if that's true, Then you are quite special indeed. As much as I want to know what being special is supposed to mean, I've got to remember why I'm here. I look down at my list of questions and decide to ask one of my own. Before he can trick me again, I meet Moreau's amused stare. You said you don't know where Quentin is, so tell me what you do know about my brother's disappearance. Please?
Clever girl. If only your brother had been smarter in his choices.
You might think his being taken was a simple matter of revenge, but I can assure you that we have far more substantial schemes at play. What I can tell you is that Quentin was looking into things he shouldn't, things your precious bureau would frown upon. I suppose he found something we wanted.
Like what? I asked desperately.
I've answered your question. You now know far more than you did when you came down here. Another dark grin. Earlier, you asked me a question. You wished to know why I wanted to meet. Care to offer a guess?
My mind is still spinning. I don't know.
Then by all means, he says, allow me to explain. There is a plan being carried out that is many years in the making. A plan so perfect that not even my capture has prevented it from coming to pass. When the dust settles, this wretched bureau will be destroyed, and magicians shall take their rightful place in the world. I had been content to wait out the destruction here in my cell, but then I felt your magic awaken, like a clap of thunder that vibrated my very bones.
Moreau waves his hands, and the scene inside the cage changes again. I see myself covered in expensive jewels, a shimmering moonstone crown atop my head.
You could be great, my dear. Truly special. With the proper guidance, you could have anything your heart desires. Anyone who has ever wronged you would bow and scrape at your feet. You need only join us, Amari Peters. Join your fellow magicians.
I just stare, unable to find my words. He bears his lengthening canines in a grin. With a twirl of his fingers, a hulking beast suddenly fills the space, 10 feet tall and as wide as a truck, with the growling head of a tiger and the muscular fur-covered body of a man. It stalks right up to the glass and lowers its snarling jaws to flash razor-sharp teeth. A low growl rattles the glass cage.
Is that what hybrids look like?
I'm backing away before I even realize it. I've never seen anything scarier in my whole life.
This is what your bureau is up against, child. Do you imagine that anything could stand against an army of these deadly creatures? But what if you didn't have to? What if creatures such as these were yours to command? What would you do with such power? What could you do?
His voice drops to a whisper.
With magic as strong as yours, I could teach you to create your own.
For a moment, I imagine myself back at Jefferson Academy, surrounded by Emily Grant and her friends. Then I imagine those taunting smiles fading away as a pack of scowling hybrids show up to help me. I'll bet they'd wet their pants at the sight. As much as I hate to admit it, a part of me likes that idea. I shake those thoughts out of my head. What am I thinking? I turn to run back to Lord Kensington before Moreau can mess with my head anymore. Still, I stop short of the elevator and make myself stand my ground, even though I feel like I could throw up. I'm on the Bureau's side. On my brother's side. Always. Moreau sighs heavily, and the illusions fade away until only he and his rocking chair remain. The Bureau has long believed themselves beyond our reach, that arrogance will be their downfall. The hour draws near when we shall regain what was taken from us. His voice hardens into a snarl. Remember that I gave you a chance, little magician. In the end, we are all bound by our choices.
16. Once we leave Blackstone Prison, Lord Kensington brings me to the Department of Supernatural Investigations to be debriefed, same as the adult agents whenever they get back from an important mission. I can't get there fast enough. I walk so quickly that I almost run over Director Van Helsing. He isn't amused. The debriefing room is the size of a closet. Inside, Agent Magnus and Agent Fiona sit at a square metal table. As soon as I'm through the door, I blurt out, "What was Quentin working on? And what did Moreau mean when he said he was looking into something he shouldn't? What did my brother find that got him kidnapped?"
"Vanquish worked directly under me," says Agent Magnus. "If he or Maria were looking into anything out of the ordinary, I'd have known about it."
"Then why would Moreau say that?"
I ask.
"We believe Moreau was merely mocking us," says Agent Fiona. "Or, at most, it was an attempt to turn you against the Bureau and recruit you to his way of thinking. I had worried as much might be true, but we've had so little success until now that I thought it worth the risk."
"I would never help him," I say. "Not for anything."
"We know you wouldn't," says Magnus. "Just don't go taking anything that man said as fact."
"Well, how about what he said about regaining what was taken?" I ask. "Is that the item of immense destructive power that you won't tell me about? That's supposed to be classified? Moreau seemed pretty sure he could get it even without trading Vanquish."
Agent Fiona winces. Agent Magnus looks smug.
"This was your brilliant idea, Fiona."
Agent Fiona lowers her voice to a whisper. "That item is none of your concern, Peters. Just know that we have taken every possible precaution to keep it safe."
So not everything was a lie. But couldn't that also mean none of it was a lie? Moreau made such a big deal out of telling each other the truth. He said they would destroy this place. Aren't you worried?
"Bunch of mumbo jumbo," says Agent Magnus. "This place is a fortress. Nothing in the known or supernatural world could harm it."
I lean forward. They didn't see his face like I did. But he seemed so sure.
Agent Fiona answers. "And ye can be sure that we've taken every precaution to be certain the Bureau remains safe. Trust us, Amari." I wasn't supposed to tell anybody what happened with Moreau today, but as soon as Elsie gets back from junior researcher training, everything spills out of my mouth.
"What are you thinking?" she asks.
"I don't know," I say, pacing the floor between our beds. "I just keep wondering, what if Moreau was telling the truth? What if he's so sure about his stupid plan that he doesn't care who knows?"
"You think he just wanted to rub it in?"
"I think he knew the Bureau wouldn't take his threats seriously because he's locked away," I say. "But maybe you and I should."
I glance at Elsie's whiteboard. "We know what the Bureau knows about Vanquish's disappearance. So let's move on to step 3.
Elsie goes over to grab the whiteboard. "Launch our own investigation."
"But where do we start?"
I think for a moment. "I'll try and figure out what Quentin might have found that got him taken. Maybe it'll help us track down Moreau's apprentice."
"That's a good idea," says Elsie.
"I'll try to research what this item of immense destructive power might be. I just wish we had more to go on besides that it was taken from Moreau." She sighs. "Well, even if there's nothing in the main library,
There are a few other places I can try. Good, I say. The more we know, the better. I like our plan. Elsie starts to smile, but it fades. Be careful, okay? Now we're the ones looking into stuff we aren't supposed to. If we get caught, we won't, I say. We can't. The next morning, I do my best to not think about my trip to Blackstone Prison. It isn't easy. Even now, standing in one of the training gyms, when I'm supposed to be listening to Agent Magnus give us our first lesson on sky sprints, my thoughts keep going back to yesterday. The size of that hybrid, are they really that scary? Or was Moreau exaggerating with his illusion? And what about Moreau's perfect plan to take down the Bureau? Or the fact that he wants me on his side, the side of the magicians? Concentrate, Amari. If you fail the tryouts, it won't matter what Moreau said. I force myself to pay attention to Agent Magnus's lecture. These boots give the wearer the ability to walk horizontally across open air, run up walls, even hang upside down from the ceiling. When used correctly, they'll give you an advantage over a great many ground-based nasties. And if you encounter a nasty that can fly, well, you'd better be right strong in your technique, because these here sky sprints will be your only chance. Everybody got that? We all nod. I can't help but stare at the sky sprints worn by the other trainees. Unlike me, they brought their own boots from home, and they all look so cool and crazy expensive. The Van Housens each have shiny chrome boots with Dubois written in cursive along the sides. Others wear Laboom brand sky sprints made of polished wood. Only three of us have to go into the equipment room to pick out a pair of standard issue sky sprints. Mine look like worn out sneakers and smell like feet. Still, I'm pretty surprised at how easily moving in the sky sprints comes for me. After about an hour, I'm keeping pace with the legacy kids as we race along the walls and take turns avoiding the obstacles Magnus puts in our path. After 3 hours, I'm able to walk across open air without losing my balance. At noon, Magnus allows us to take a shot at a practice course the agents use to keep their skills sharp. We call it the Invisible Bridge, he says. He plops down behind a control panel, presses a few buttons, and poof. Two diving boards rise to face each other from opposite sides of the room. A few seconds later, a dozen gigantic punching bags descend from the ceiling. With the push of another button, the bags begin to swing back and forth at different speeds. The goal is pretty clear. We've got to run across open air from one diving board to the other without getting knocked down by the punching bags. It sounds a lot easier than it looks. Magnus grins. Who wants to give it a shot? Not many hands go up. Even the legacy kids look wary. It's easy to see why. Your reflexes have to be lightning fast in order to stop and start fast enough to avoid the bags. The scariest part, though, is definitely getting by the final bag. It swings so fast, it's pretty much a blur. Of course, both the Van Helsings raise their hands. They've probably got a course just like this in their mansion back home. I lift my hand too. As bad as my test score was, this might be my first chance to shine as a trainee. Or fall flat on my face. A really long fall.
You sure you're up to this, kid?
Magnus asks. Not really, I say. He chuckles.
Gonna try anyway?
Yep.
Good.
He raises his voice. A round of applause for our five brave volunteers. He leads the applause.
Tell you what, let's have you five line up out in the hall. Ain't exactly fair to the first volunteer to let the others watch.
I head into the hallway with the others. The Van Helsings move to the back of the line, so I've got no choice but to take the spot behind them. For a second, I think maybe Lara will be so focused on completing the obstacle course that she might leave me alone. But then she turns to face me with that little grin of hers. Nice sky sprints. Those might be the first pair ever made. With so much on my mind already, I'm really not in the mood. My words just come pouring out. What's your problem with me? I get that you don't like magicians. Guess what? No one does. But you're the only person who's made it their life's mission to annoy me. My outburst catches her off guard, but not for long. She crosses her arms, like you don't know. Know what? I ask. I barely know anything about the supernatural world. My test score yesterday is proof of that. Is it all the attention I'm getting? Because my life would be a lot less complicated if nobody knew my name. Lara goes red. You think this is about attention? You really are as dumb as you look. I've got over 2 million followers on Yerg. I've got all the attention I need. Then why? I ask desperately. My brother and your sister were partners. Shouldn't we try to be friends? Your brother is the reason my sister wasn't there to watch me get my badge. The reason she's never come back. Emotion cuts her words short. I stand there, stunned. What are you saying? If Quentin hadn't convinced Maria to help him on some secret case, she'd still be here. She never even liked being a special agent. She wanted to be a trainer, like Agent Fiona. But your brother would always convince her to come back. And when she finally ignored him and put in her transfer papers, he guilted her into helping one last time. No one's seen them since. Secret case. Is that what Moreau meant when he said my brother was looking into something he shouldn't? But Agent Magnus said that he'd know if Vanquish was working on anything out of the ordinary. Unless, maybe they kept it a secret from him too. I didn't know, I say. A loud ooh comes from inside the training gym. The others crowd the doorway, and Lara lets Dylan pull her over too. Still in a daze, I get to the doorway last, just in time to see Brian Lee lying on the floor rubbing his shoulder.
Bobbed when you should have weaved, says Magnus, tossing him an ice pack.
He looks over at the rest of us in the doorway.
Who's next?
Billy Pogo heads inside, and me and Lara don't speak again. She keeps to one side of her brother, and I stand on the other. The worst part is that I could imagine Quentin doing what Lara said if he felt like it was the right thing. He was always so good with words. How many times had he convinced me to do something I didn't want to do? Cheers ring out, and we all rush back to the doorway. Agent Magnus is shaking Billy Pogo's hand.
Never seen anyone trip and stumble their way past every bag. Kid, that unnatural luck ability of yours is really something.
Now it's Lara's turn. Once she's gone, it finally feels like I can breathe a little.
She's really not as bad as she seems, says Dylan.
He tries to smile. Well, she is, but she isn't usually this bad. Is it true? I ask. What she said about Quentin and Maria splitting up? Dylan leans his head back against the wall and nods. But Maria and Quentin were partners for years before she decided to try something new. It only makes sense that Maria would still have Quentin's back if he needed her. Partnership is a sacred bond for agents. There's even a ceremony where you take an oath. You don't blame him then? I ask. He shakes his head. My sister is smart and brave, and wouldn't have let anybody make her do something she didn't want to do. Then he adds, I miss her.
I miss Quentin too, I say.
Everything would be different if he were here. I wouldn't feel so. I stop myself from saying too much.
Alone?
Dylan says with a sad smile.
I know the feeling.
Lara and I are twins, so everybody assumes we're super close. But we're nothing alike. Never have been. Lara likes to be the star of the show. But I'm more like Maria. happy to stay in the background. He laughs at my raised eyebrows. I know she was famous, but you don't catch the most dangerous magician of all time and not get famous. Maria was cool with giving Quentin the spotlight, though, letting him do all the interviews. He shrugs. It's just who she was. Cheers go up in the training gym. Lara must have made it, too. Dylan starts for the door but stops short. You're natural in sprints. Just take your time. The last bag moves so fast that you can't stop to think, though. You've just got to take a leap of faith. Do that, and you've got a chance. But hesitate, and you're going to get clobbered. Dylan goes through the door, leaving me alone with a million thoughts swimming through my head. No surprise he makes it through the obstacle course, too. Now it's my turn. I can feel everyone watching me as I make my way across the training gym. When Magnus gives the signal, I start up the ladder to the first diving board, except my hands are so sweaty from nerves, I nearly fall. Snickers ring out. When I finally do get to the top, I make the mistake of looking down. The diving board is even higher than it seems from the floor. I swallow. You can do this, I tell myself. I squeeze my toes together to activate the hover feature and race toward the diving board on the opposite side of the room. Getting by the super slow bags is easy. The next few are a little faster, and I have to slow down a couple times to avoid them. I pass bag 5, then bag 6. So far, so good. My arm is clipped by bag 9, and it nearly knocks me off balance, but I'm just barely able to catch myself. I sprint past bag 10 and stumble past bag 11 by accident. I come to a stop in front of bag 12. Even up close, this thing moves so fast I can barely keep track of it. Dylan said to make a leap of faith. That means I just have to believe I'll make it, right? But what if I don't? What if I'm not cut out for this? I tense up at the thought, but then force myself to stagger forward. I don't even see the bag coming. I just feel a sudden impact, and I'm falling. At some point, my shoes light up, and the hover feature activates, so that I'm hanging upside down in midair. My eyes are level with Magnus. Gave it a good shot, says Magnus. Almost got there on your first day. Too bad it wasn't good enough. To say that I'm grumpy after sucking at the invisible bridge would be an understatement. Am I even good enough to pass Friday's tryout? The reality that I could fail and be sent home sends a shiver down my back. Director Van Helsing made it clear I won't get another chance. And what's worse, they'll take my memories too. These might be my final days in the supernatural world. I could be running out of time to get any of the answers I came here for. But I know of at least one answer I can get right now. I pull out my phone and message Magician Girl 18. From Amari_Peters. How do I know you aren't Moreau's apprentice? The moment I hit send, I regret it. Accusing someone of being evil isn't how you treat someone who wants to help. If she gets upset and never messages me again, could I really blame her? So far, no response. Usually she answers right away. That worries me so much, I slide my phone in my pocket and try to think about something else. 15 minutes later, my phone finally buzzes as I'm sitting down for lunch in the food court. I'm so anxious that I fumble and drop the thing. It's not a new message. Instead, it's an eerie notification suggesting I send a friend request to Lara Van Helsing. Like she needs any more friends. I glance over at her joking with a group of junior agent trainees on the other side of the food court and then click on her page. Scrolling through her pictures only worsens my mood. She really does have 2 million followers, 2.3 million to be exact. I see her hugging her father in front of Van Helsing Manor. The place looks like the outside of a mall. In another photo, she's on a street made of gold, blowing a kiss to the camera. The best photo is one where she's staring out the window of an underwater train at a city that glows. The caption reads, "Headed to Atlantis with Mom for a weekend of shopping." Our lives really couldn't be any more different. In every way. Dylan must have been telling the truth about him and Laura not being close, because I don't see him in any of her photos. He doesn't even have an Eeyore Filth Thims Filth Them page. My phone buzzes in my hand. New message from Magician Girl 18. "I'm not, I promise. Tell you what, since you've proven you can keep my secret, why don't we meet face to face?" I read the message twice. She wants us to meet up? In person? "Your aura is extremely purple," says Elsie as she plops down at my table. She sets a copy of Physics and Magic, the often lack thereof, on the table in front of her. I frown and shove my phone back into my pocket. "What's that mean?" "Purple can be tricky, but it usually means somebody's feeling overwhelmed. Still thinking about Moreau? Or is it the plan? Your part does seem a lot harder than mine." I hate that I still can't be honest with her about Magician Girl 18's messages. At least not yet. I'm not exactly thrilled about the idea of meeting up with a stranger, especially after Moreau. But if this girl really is willing to help me, then I also don't want to do anything to mess it up. "It's this tryout," I tell Elsie. "You know how bad I flunked the first test? They said you really can't prepare for the first junior agent tryout, but I'm sure you have to know something about the supernatural world." Elsie shrugs. "Maybe you don't." "Maybe," I say, unconvinced. "Do you know what your first tryout will be?" Elsie frowns. "A test? But junior researcher and junior agent are very different." I think back to how confidently she wrote down junior researcher at the departmental presentations. "Do you like it? Junior researcher training, I mean?" Her whole face brightens, and she goes on this long rant about all the amazing things she's learned and seen and done because of all the great ideas she's constantly coming up with. She's even been asked to sit in on some brainstorming sessions with the adult researchers at the Department of Magical Science. Just seeing her excitement lifts my own spirits. After 10 minutes of catching up, a few researcher trainees stop by our table. "Hey, Else," says a smiling Korean girl in a lab coat. Elsie explains that this is her junior researcher trainee lab partner, Gemma. And I instantly feel jealous. It hasn't even been a full day of training, and she's already given Elsie a nickname. I haven't even given Elsie a nickname. Gemma gives me a little wave. "The junior researchers have a table near the taco stand, and they're inviting the trainees to come watch them demonstrate all 7 kinds of explosions. The magical ones are supposed to be really cool." Elsie's eyes flash with excitement, but she tries to hide it. "No, thanks. I'm just going to hang with my roomie today." "No," I say. "You should go. We can hang out later." I glance toward the Van Helsing table. I should probably try to get to know the junior agent trainees.
"If you're sure."
Elsie eyes me like she's waiting for me to change my mind. I wonder what my aura looks like right now. Once Elsie is gone, I reread Magician Girl 18's message. Do I really want to meet this girl? What if she's not even who she says she is? There might be some kind of creature out there that eats magicians for dinner and lures them to its den through social media. Okay, that sounds dumb. But still, it's so obvious to me that meeting up is a bad idea. But then, the same could be true for my next move. I pick up my tray and start toward the junior agent trainee table. My heart thumps in my chest. This might be worse than when I had to go on stage and accept my Moonstone badge. This will be fine. Some of those kids cheered for me earlier. I can't go the whole summer without making more friends, and Elsie shouldn't have to blow off her new junior researcher trainee friends just to keep me from sitting alone. I can do this. Lara may hate me, but Dylan seems okay when he wants to be. I manage to get most of the way there before Brian Lee notices me and gives Lara a nudge. Lara groans. You can't be serious. I thought I'd sit with you guys today. I put on my best smile. Sorry, says Lara. Only people with legal abilities are allowed. Besides, we wouldn't want to catch whatever it was you gave the crystal ball. A few of the others laugh. Some even throw their feet atop the empty chairs at the table to keep me from sitting. I look around for someone to have my back, but even the kids who cheered me on in the training gym won't meet my eyes now. Finally, I look to Dylan, hoping to find some hint of the boy who talked to me when we were alone in the hallway, but he just pushes his food around his plate. Guess I'm only worth being nice to when he doesn't have family around. It's Jefferson Academy all over again. I turn and walk straight out of the food court. No way I'm gonna let them see me cry. New message from Magician Girl 18. They're never going to accept you, but I will if you give me a chance. How does she know already? You know what? I don't even care. I type up a quick reply. From Amari_Peters. When and where? New message from Magician Girl 18. Tomorrow. I'll message you in the morning with a time and place. 17. When I wake the next morning, the first thing I do is check my phone to see if Magician Girl 18 has messaged about meeting up. If she really has info about Moreau, even just about being a magician, this could be major. Unfortunately, when I click on the eorg icon, I get this message. Error. Please update OtherNet app. And because I have the worst luck ever, Elsie's bed is empty. She's not even in the food court for breakfast. Apparently, the junior researcher trainees all have to attend a presentation from some really old, really famous magical scientist who's visiting from the Bureau's London outpost. Which means I have to skip breakfast and go to the lobby of the Department of Magical Science to wait for her. Whispers, the elevator shouts, "Now arriving at the Department of Magical Science!" as its doors open to a wall of purplish-blue flames. At first, I figure he must have the floors mixed up. Then I remember the lobby of the Department of Magical Science is constantly changing to reflect current breakthroughs in the field. Whispers? I ask. Is it safe to walk through that? Yes! Whispers shouts. Okay, I say, covering my ears. I stretch one foot out through the burning wall. Thankfully, I don't turn into a Mari-flavored barbecue. So I hop the rest of me through the fire. Once I'm safely on the other side, a tiny metal drone floats over to where I'm standing. You just stepped through a wall of nightfire. What you may not know is that nightfire isn't actually a true fire at all, but rather a convergence of naturally occurring free magic and ultraviolet light energy that combusts harmlessly. That's great, I say, not caring at all. Would you like to hear more about the scientist who discovered nightfire? Asks the drone. He's visiting today. No thanks, I say. The drone sighs and floats away. The rest of the lobby is covered in giant screens, showing different experiments taking place at Bureau facilities around the world. Each screen has a couple drones hovering nearby to answer any questions passerby might have. I find a bench beneath a live feed of Brazilian researchers studying the growth rates of various grasses. It's right next to a darkened screen flashing the words, "Outpost, under repair, due to recent attack." It's not hard to guess why no one else has chosen to sit here. Elsie finally comes out, surrounded by a huge group of junior researcher trainees. They smile and laugh as they talk, and she looks so happy. It's the complete opposite of how I feel whenever I'm with the other junior agent trainees. I wave her over. "What's wrong?" she asks, looking concerned. "I don't know how to update the other Net app." Realizing how ridiculous that sounds, I add, "I'm waiting for an important message on Jurg." Elsie raises an eyebrow. "Really? From who?" I probably said too much. No one you know." "Okay," says Elsie. "Well, it's my mistake. I could have sworn I set the app to auto-update. It can be a pain to do manually." She taps away on the screen for a couple minutes. "Got it," she says. "And don't worry about your missed messages. They should all come." Elsie frowns. "Who are you supposed to be meeting?" I snatch the phone and have a look for myself. New message from Magician Girl 18. 6 p.m., room 307 in the Vanderbilt Hotel. It's really happening then. My stomach does a flip. As exciting as this is, I'm also terrified. Elsie crosses her arms. "You can't really be thinking of meeting this girl." "I should make up a story. I know I should. But nothing I say will erase what she just saw. I'm caught. And besides, if I'm really going to go through with this meeting, somebody should know where I am, just in case something bad happens." She claims she can tell me more about Moreau and about being a magician. I've been so focused on finding my brother that I haven't even given much thought to my magic and how it works. "Promise you won't tell anyone." "I don't know," she says. "There's probably a reason this Magician Girl 18 is hiding from the Bureau. What if she's Moreau's apprentice? What if this is how they get to you? You could be walking into a trap." "She told me she wasn't. And I'm not going to assume the worst just because she's a magician. I'm one too. And I'm not bad." "I guess not," says Elsie. "But then we're assuming she even is a magician. There are probably a lot of bad guys who wouldn't mind using you for a revenge since they can't get their hands on your brother." I didn't even think about that. There's no way for me to know if these messages are really from another magician. This mystery person could be lying about everything. I have to try. She can't be that bad if she wants to meet so close to the Bureau, right? Maybe I should come too, just in case. "You're the only person who knows about this," I say. "If you're right and I don't come back, then someone has to let people know where I went." Elsie frowns. "I guess that does make sense. But be careful, okay? I mean it. Your brother had a lot of enemies." I blow out a huge sigh of relief. I'll be as careful as I can. With the first tryout tomorrow, the only thing scheduled for junior agent trainees today is something called supernatural immersion. Elsie described it as a supernatural entity show and tell, whatever that means. I'm one of the first to get to the classroom, so I take a seat near the front. As the other trainees come in, they do everything in their power not to sit next to me. Even when the seats get full, kids decide they'd rather take up spots on the floor. I just sit there in a full classroom with a circle of empty desks around me, like I've got some terrible disease no one wants to catch. I don't get it. Dylan and his sister are the last to come in. At the sight of me sitting alone, Lara shoots me a little smirk. They're both about to take up a spot on the floor next to some other legacy kids when Dylan stops, turns around, and comes to sit next to me. He gives me a small smile, and I honestly feel like I could burst into tears. It's so nice. Lara looks ready to explode. A chubby white guy in a gray suit comes in a few minutes after the class is supposed to have started. "Named Senior Agent Cozy," he says. "Before we get started, I have a message to pass on from Agent Fiona." He clears his throat. There will be a sleep-in taking place in the training rooms tonight, with the goal of fostering camaraderie in the midst of competition. Further details to be provided. Now that that's out of the way, who knows what today's class is about? Dylan answers, "The purpose of supernatural immersion is to get us used to being around supernatural entities." "Very good," Agent Cozy claps. "Our first guest got spooked and canceled on us after this most recent attack on the Bureau. But not to worry, I called in a favor. And do I ever have a treat for you." He dims the lights. Shouts and shrieks go up as a pitch-black puddle slinks across the floor to the center of the room. I jump in my seat as it passes in front of my desk. Billy Pogo goes red and points a shaking finger.
"I know what that is. It's a boogeyman. Had one under my bed for years."
"A boogeyman?" I lean in closer as the shadowy shape of a woman emerges from the puddle, her glowing white eyes searching the room.
"Boogie person," says the shadow lady. "It's the 21st century, for heaven's sake."
Agent Cozy hoots in delight. "Isn't she grand? Well, class, this is your chance. Immerse yourself in this experience. Have a listen to her story." The boogie person tells us that her kind resides in the deep, dark shadows of sketchy places. She explains that certain creatures are allowed to scare and harass unsuspecting people if they wander someplace generally acknowledged to be spooky, like graveyards, old abandoned mansions, dark caves, and under beds. As long as the area has a current permission to terrorize zoning permit from the Department of Supernatural Licenses and Records. Makes me wonder if that's why Quentin always warned me about taking a shortcut through the creepy junkyard down the street from our apartment. There's no sign out front, and I've never ever seen anybody go in or out of there. Once the boogie person is done telling us about a few of her favorite frights, Agent Cozy lets us ask questions. I want to know more about that permission to terrorize stuff, but Billy Pogo gets his question out first. Are you related to the boogie, person who haunted the upstairs bedroom at 231 Nacker Boulevard in Charlotte, North Carolina? The boogie person strokes her chin.
I do have a second cousin I simply adore in Charlotte. Can you describe him?
Well, he's sort of shadowy and terrifying, and he made these creepy noises.
We're all shadowy and terrifying, love. And creepy noises are in the job description. You'll need to be more specific.
Sometimes he'd make this booga booga sound out of nowhere, right when I was drifting off to sleep.
Oh, that was Clarence. Firm believer in the booga boogas he is. Myself, I'm more of a spooky whispers in the middle of the night gal.
Why do you scare people? Asks Brian Lee. I wouldn't mind hearing the answer to that myself.
Everyone's got to eat.
She shrugs.
Boogie people eat fear.
What does fear taste like? Asks Dylan.
I have it on good authority that it tastes like chicken. But as I've never had chicken before, I can't really say how true that is.
Fair enough. But why children? Asks a girl.
Because nowadays, adults just don't fear us like they used to. They hear something under the bed, and they're grabbing the flashlight to have a look. Children are far more likely to let their imaginations run wild, and that makes for some tasty fear, let me tell you.
I have a question, says Laura Van Helsing. Well, really more of a statement. I roll my eyes. Of course she does. Anything to get everyone's attention back on her. Says here, Laura continues, squinting at her phone, that boogie people date back 700 years to the war with the Knight Brothers. Looking uncomfortable, the boogie person glances at Agent Cozy.
We don't really like to talk about those days. Dark times and such.
Laura keeps reading. It's believed that boogie people were created by the Knight Brothers and sent into the camps of enemy armies to terrify them in the night, the result being that armies would arrive on the battlefield drowsy and sluggish. Laura looks at the boogie woman. Such a scandalous beginning for your kind. Agent Cozy steps forward.
That's quite enough, young lady. This boogie person is our guest. I don't see how any of that is relevant.
But there's a magician right here in this room, Laura says. Don't you recognize one of your masters?
The boogie person sniffs the air a few times and then looks to me. She drops to her knees.
Apologies, my lady. I didn't recognize you.
Oh, no, you don't have to bow. I hate that she sounds so afraid all of a sudden. Please, stand up.
The boogie person scrambles to her feet and looks up at me with frightened eyes.
Us boogie folk know what you magicians are planning, and we don't want any part in it. Please don't force us. I'm begging you.
I'm not. Do you mean Moreau?
Please, just leave us be.
The lights flicker, and the boogie person fades into the shadows. Her fear of me makes me sick to my stomach. Is this what it means to be a magician? The rest of the trainees just stare in stunned silence. I swear I could melt right into this chair. Even though we agreed she wouldn't come, after hearing about my supernatural immersion class, Elsie begged me to at least let her take the elevator ride with me up to the third floor of the Vanderbilt Hotel. I told her no, for her own good. But let me tell you, no one's overpowering a were-dragon if she wants to go somewhere. On the bright side, without her help, I never would have known about Mischief, a part-time service elevator known for pranking kids with out-of-order signs and self-destruct countdowns, and for a willingness to assist in any type of general rule-breaking. As Elsie and I are lifted up through the bureau, Mischief has been giggling nonstop in the background, saying,
I'm helping a real-life magician escape. It's my crowning achievement.
I'm so nervous, I'm bouncing from foot to foot. If I don't come back, you have my permission to add my Moonstone badge to your Vanquish collection. Think about the bragging rights you'll have at the next convention. You can make all the jokes you want, says Elsie. You're forgetting again that I can see how worried you are. Mischief says,
now entering the Vanderbilt Hotel.
About 10 seconds later, the elevator stops and the doors open up inside the closet of an empty hotel room. I'm confused for a second, but then I realize it makes sense to have a secret entrance like this. Our elevators aren't exactly open to the public.
Be careful, says Elsie.
I will, I say. Thanks for coming with me. The second I step off, Mischief squeals,
magician on the loose!
Elsie quickly mashes the button to shut the doors, and they both drop down out of sight. I take a deep breath and dash out into the hallway before I lose my nerve. When I reach room 307, I spend forever standing in front of the door, trying to gather up the courage to knock. Also, how are you supposed to greet a fellow magician? Is there a secret handshake or something? I knock. I'm so nervous I can't stand still. But nothing happens until I hear the door behind me click open. I spin around to find a tall, pink-haired girl leaning into the hallway. Tattoos cover her arms.
Hurry, she says, before anyone sees.
Are you?
Yes,
she says.
Now come inside.
I follow the girl into room 308. She waits by the door a few seconds, peeking into the hallway.
You came alone, right?
I did, I say.
And nobody followed you?
I don't think so.
Good.
The pink-haired girl nods, drops the fancy wooden Do Not Disturb sign onto the doorknob, then shuts the door. She takes a few steps backward, away from me.
I'm going to show you something, but you have to promise not to freak out, okay?
Or maybe you could just tell me what you're about to do.
It's better if I just show you.
Slowly, the girl raises her right hand. As it passes in front of her face, she whispers something that sounds like, "Misspell." Suddenly, her face begins to blur, as though somebody went at it with a giant eraser. I jump back. The blurry-faced girl tilts her head and lets out the creepiest laugh. It sounds like multiple people are laughing at once. I turn and dash for the door.
Wait!
I know that voice. I turn and feel my jaw drop open.
18. Dylan Van Helsing smiles, and with a wave of his hand, all traces of the girl are gone.
Okay, maybe I should have warned you.
No way.
Yes way, he chuckles. Surprised?
But I don't get. I mean, how?
How do you think? Dylan grins like it should be obvious.
You're a magician?
Dylan blows into his hand, and three fiery butterflies burst into life. They fly smoky circles around my head and then fizzle out. A million different questions pop into my mind. They must all come out at once because he says, "Whoa!" one at a time. My face flushes.
Sorry, why in the world did you call yourself Magician Girl?
He flushes. It was part of my cover. I wasn't sure if I could trust you. The Bureau doesn't know about me yet, and I want to keep it that way. I didn't know if you'd report me or not.
Okay, but why didn't your magic show up on the crystal ball like mine did?
Because I crafted an illusion, he says with a smile. Made it look like I was just another trainee. Took me months to get it just right. I think back to how relieved he looked when he came back to his seat. I thought he was just nervous about his supernatural ability. He was relieved that he'd pulled off his illusion.
Well, what about the boogie person? Why couldn't she smell you?
Illusions can fool any of the senses, not just sight, says Dylan, grinning. I wrapped myself in an illusion that can only be smelled instead of seen. You never know what supernaturals you'll run into at the Bureau, so I make sure to always hide my magician's scent.
That's incredible, I say.
Not as incredible as your illusion, says Dylan. You made it seem like the crystal ball filled with smoke and cracked. But that was just an accident, I say.
Exactly, says Dylan.
Only an extremely powerful magician could have pulled off an illusion of that size without realizing it. I'm not sure how to feel. That magic meter, Moreau, and now Dylan have all told me how powerful I am. But that's not how I feel at all.
Compared to you, I'm a pretty average illusionist, adds Dylan. But I'm a really strong technologist.
What's a technologist?
Dylan smiles and my phone buzzes. Answer it. I pull my phone out of my pocket and take a look. I gasp. New message from Dylan.
Pretty cool, huh?
No way.
I can't help but smile. That's so cool.
Isn't it? Says Dylan.
Magic isn't the curse my dad and everybody else at the Bureau make it out to be. I'll bet they gave you that whole speech about how too much magic turns you evil, blah, blah, blah. Am I right?
I just nod.
Well, nobody gave the Knight Brothers their magic. They were born magicians.
Moreau said I'm probably a born magician too, I say. The idea that I've always had magic seems so impossible.
So it's true then. I overheard my dad talking to the chief about you going to Blackstone to meet with Moreau. Yeah, I say. He claims there's some big plan to destroy the Bureau. Kind of like what that boogie person was saying. Remember what you said about Moreau's apprentice wanting to make a trade for Vanquish? Well,